WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
A year ago, I was at a writer's conference in North Dakota, and beside the motel swimming pool, I got to chatting with a guest not at the conference, a woman with four small children. Three of these were swimming like minnows, and the baby was splashing so that it was obvious that she would soon be a swimmer, too. I was so intrigued by Mrs. Konopasek and her family that I taped this interview for Reading and Writing and Radio. Teachers and kids, your writing topics can be adoption, or handicaps, or discipline, or raising children, or you decide. Here is our interview.
Oh, hello, children. I am Elizabeth Konopasek, and I'm married to Dr. Konopasek, who is a professor at the University of Manitoba.
And tell us the names of your four daughters.
We have four children. The oldest is Mary, who's six. Next comes Anne, who's three, Wendy is two, and Eula is one.
Now, I noticed it's Elizabeth.
Yes.
I noticed Elizabeth's accent right off because she sounded so like a friend of mine in England. And Elizabeth does come from England, but they're now living in Canada. And I noticed the baby in the pool. I wasn't sure that she could see, and I mentioned something about asking if she could see, and Elizabeth said, "Oh, is it showing?" That was your remark.
Yes.
I said, "Well, I thought so," and then she proceeded to tell me about the children. So why don't you tell our listeners about each of your children? First of all, they're adopted, right?
Yes, they're all adopted. Two are white children and two are Native Indians. Mary, the oldest, is a Cree Indian. She comes from a reservation near Churchill, which is very far north. And when her mother was pregnant, Mary's mother sniffed gasoline. And the lead in the gasoline went to the baby's eyes, and Mary was born with cataracts, which were taken off at birth, but has left her with only 5% vision.
So she'll never have more than
5% vision. She wears contact lenses and very thick glasses. And she's able to see, to run around, and she can see large print books.
Mm-hmm.
So all her books have to be, the print has to be at least 1/4 inch high for her to be able to read.
Mm-hmm. And when did you adopt her, as a little baby or as an older child?
We adopted her at 3 weeks old. We had her at 3 weeks old. And she remained a foster child because she was so sick. And then it became apparent that she would never go home. And whenever we went away, which was very often, we had to ask permission to take her away. And we always had, the agencies didn't like us taking her away as a foster child. So we claimed legal guardianship of her 2 years ago. And then this year we adopted her.
Mm-hmm.
And she is now ours.
Yes. Well, now tell us about your second little girl.
Anne is a normal child. We had her at 6 days old. She is also native. She was born to a very young mother who felt that she couldn't cope with a young baby. She was only 14, her mother.
Yes.
And she couldn't cope. Anne is Ojibwe.
An Ojibwe,
which is another Indian race. But there is nothing wrong with Anne.
Mm-hmm. Did you know that at the time, that she was probably
all right,
sound?
Except that her mother had been on drugs. Her mother had been on marijuana right through her pregnancy, but they thought the child was all right when she was born.
Mm-hmm. And then there's little Wendy.
Wendy was born, she is a white child. In fact, both her parents were Irish. They were a married couple that when Wendy was born, they felt that they couldn't face a child as sick as Wendy. Wendy was born, she was only 2 pounds, and her internal organs were outside the body, consisting of her stomach and her intestines. They did emergency surgery as much as they could at birth, which meant taking out 12 inches of her intestines and also repairing lots of minor breaks in the intestine. The intestines were actually in pieces.
I should think they would have been during the birth process.
Yeah.
Too.
So they had to put plastic tubing in, and instead of being able to finish the job there, they had to pull the intestines outside the body so that she couldn't go to the toilet in the normal way. And she was fitted with a bag, which is called a colostomy,
mm-hmm.
which she had for almost 2 years. And last year she had more surgery, and she got rid of her colostomy. She was joined up together again.
Mm-hmm.
So now she is without her colostomy.
And so she runs around like a normal
little
girl.
She runs around. And she now weighs normal two-year-old weight, where mm-hmm. she was only 2 pounds at birth.
And then we come to the baby, Eula.
Eula is just a year old. She was a year in March. Eula is blind, deaf, and spastic. She, from the waist downwards, she seems to have very little movement. She also seems to have some throat involvement, which makes it very hard for her to swallow. She's completely blind, except that they're now beginning to think that she may just see a shadow, because she puts her hands in front of her face a lot.
I was noticing that she was having her hands in front and wiggling her fingers,
That's
and
right.
I was thinking, is she feeling them? It is almost as if she could see them, I was saying.
I think they cast a shadow over her face, and it
uh-huh.
gives her a bit of stimulation, because a child like Eula has no way to stimulate herself, whereas normal children of that age would be looking around and into everything. Eula
mm-hmm.
can't do this now.
Well, I noticed that you were giving her lots of tactile stimulation.
Oh, yes.
That you had her in the pool. All your children, you know, swim. The 6-year-old, the 3-year-old, the 2-year-old are like little fish, and I imagine that Eula won't be long in learning to swim, too.
No, well, we've just bought a house with a very large swimming pool in, and the object is now to get Eula to swim before next summer, because Eula, if she ever fell into a pool, would have no way of getting out. So it's very
mm-hmm.
important Eula learns to swim in many other ways too, because swimming for a child with any handicap is just fantastic, because whereas at 2 she will have to hold her hand all the time, in the pool she'll be free to swim on her own, so it gives them that bit of freedom that they can't have when they're walking around.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So it would be fantastic if she could learn to swim. And I know with the other handicapped children it's just brought them on so much. It's just given them the freedom of the water that they can't have outside the water.
Well, I noticed that she was splashing around so there in your lap and not at all afraid and getting her head under some, and she was there in the hot pool, and I imagine you had her some in the cooler pool too.
Yes.
To have the different temperatures.
I try and start them off at an early age, even in the bath, just playing with a bit more water than you'd normally give a child, and just making sure that they're okay, but letting them see
mm-hmm.
that there's nothing to be frightened with. And warm water relaxes a child with any muscular problems.
Yes.
It gives them much more relaxed feelings.
Well, tell me and tell our kids that are listening how it is that you and your husband decided to adopt handicapped children and children of other races. I mean,
well, I've always looked after children ever since I left school. I was a children's nurse on a big passenger liner, and I met my husband on a world cruise. I was nurse on the ship and he was a passenger. He is also interested in children. He used to do a lot of work with supplying artificial arms and things to children, and he's a physicist, but his main interest is implantations of different devices for children. And also when we met, he was going to Vietnam to work with the Vietnamese adoption societies, bringing the children back to Canada and America,
mm-hmm.
the ones that needed adoption. So it was just a natural process that we wanted lots of children. And we met late in life, and we got married late in life, and we both felt that I was too old to start having babies, and there's so many babies that need homes. And I was a little bit apprehensive at first and said, well, there's nothing like your own children. And as soon as we had our first, I realized that if you're adopted, it just doesn't mean anything. It's you love them just as much as you do your biological children. There's mm-hmm. just no difference. They're yours once they come into your arms, and you treat them as yours.
Mm-hmm. And you said to me earlier that they all behave as sisters, that they have no sense of any difference.
They're very, very close and very protective of each other, and I just don't think that they feel any difference. Of course, they're very young at the moment, but they're very close, very protective, and they fight the same as other sisters, and they play the same as other sisters, and they also keep to themselves. If there's a group of fighting children, they protect each other.
You're in your husband's special interest in the handicapped children.
Handicapped children. Well, as I say, he worked with handicapped children, and we felt we had a.
Hear him in the background. One of the kids is up from her nap and is making some noise with her dolly. Okay, go on.
We felt that I had my nurse's training, and we felt we had a big home, and we don't have mortgages and things over our heads, so we do have the financial resources to keep handicapped children, because it is an mm-hmm. ongoing expense as well, with contact lenses and hearing aids and extra tuition for swimming.
And special therapists.
Special therapists. Mm-hmm. The baby has a physiotherapist once a week, and an occupational therapist, and a speech therapist. Mm-hmm. The 6-year-old now is getting out of that stage, but she does have a therapist with her at all times at school. She has a tutor companion that goes to school with her, stays at school, sits by her at school, and helps her with her work if she can't see the blackboard, or she can't see the blackboard, so everything's done just for her, and yet she's in a normal mm-hmm. class with normal children. And that'll go on right throughout the school. She also has a TV reader coming, which is a big TV screen with a camera of its own in it, and you put the book underneath the camera and it shows up the letters mm-hmm. on the screen, so she can read your books by putting this book underneath the screen.
Mm-hmm. Do you read to the children?
Very much. The oldest blind child has talking books a lot, and I record books for her because she's a normal print, she's unable to see. But as I say, she's grade one, so most of grade one print is large-ish at the moment. She can see some of it, so she's okay. But once she goes up to grade 2, 3, or 4, the print gets smaller and smaller. She's going to have more and more difficulty. But we are teaching her to use her own tape recorder and talking books. But
then you're going to teach her to write, you're saying, too.
Yes, the school and I are having a little bit of controversy at the moment, because the school is insisting that she learns to type, and she's only 6, and we are both saying that she should learn to write first, and her writing is reasonably good. Mm-hmm. And we think that she should learn to write and then maybe learn to type in a few years' time when she has mastered the art of writing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems a shame to teach her to type, and she'd probably
The writing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She'd be lazy over writing, and if we have a typewriter in the house, it would have to be electric typewriter. She would just go straight to that and never be able to write, mm-hmm. which seems a great shame.
Tell me what you have in mind for the teaching of little Eula. Now, these 3 older girls all have ears, and one is normal, and the little girl with the stomach problems has eyes and ears, but here's little Eula, who is both deaf and blind.
Yeah, well, that, you know, it started already. We already have 3 therapists coming into the house to teach her. Everything has got to be taught to her. She's got to learn where her plate is in front of her, where it is always put. One has to remember that when you do something with a child like this, everything's got to be the same every day. You've got to put her in her high chair and show her where her food is. Let her touch it. Let her go around the shops. Even now, when I go shopping, grocery shopping, I often will take her and not the others and put the oranges into the cart. And let her feel and just make a nick in some of them so she can smell an orange.
Mm-hmm.
So she knows an orange smells funny and she feels
and
the difference
feel of
texture.
The orange, yes.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. And the same with an apple. She knows the difference between an apple and an orange because it's smooth. But all this is just a case of keep doing it and doing it. Mm-hmm. At the moment she's 19 months old, so you don't expect her to learn it in the next day. It's going to take years for her to mm-hmm. learn. She's got to learn now what toothpaste is, how it tastes differently from my husband's shaving cream or my husband's brill cream that he uses on his hair. And the only way she can do that is by smell and taste.
Mm-hmm.
So you teach her the difference in these things. The same with food that she's eating. The only way she knows what the difference between a chocolate chip cookie and a plain cookie isn't as we do to look at it. She's got to be able to break it and feel that one's chocolate chip and one's a plain cookie.
Mm-hmm.
Or smell it to see if it's cheese or everything's smell, really,
yes.
and feel with her. Mm-hmm. And it starts at this age. And the more we can do for her now before she's five, the better for her.
Mm-hmm.
It consists of everything. If you think about it, it's china. She's got to learn the difference between china and glass and paper and glass and plastic and mm-hmm. china. It's there's so many things to teach her. It just seems endless. And she's learning a sign language now. She knows when I want to feed her, I put three fingers in her mouth. And these are signs that everyone that deals with her has got to learn. She knows that she knows which is me and my husband because my husband has a beard. But the therapists that come to see her, one of them puts a particular ring against her face, so she knows it's that therapist. Another therapist puts two fingers on her nose, so she knows who's going to deal with her.
Hmm.
So everyone has their own sign that that deals with that child. And the children, she seems to know which is which with the children.
When I hear you say this, I think what would have happened to Eula and to these other children, especially the one with the operations, if you hadn't taken them? What sort of care could they have looked forward to? Certainly not as much tender, loving care.
I think, you know, there's always something turns up for these children. These children need a mother and father as much as any other child, or mm-hmm. even
But
more.
I mean, do mothers and fathers show up? It seems to me that don't these children stay?
I think people are frightened. I think if people realized, you've seen my children now at sort of 6, 3, 2 and 1. If you'd seen them at birth or when we first had them, you'd have thought we were completely crazy. And now you see three semi-normal, healthy children.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know how exhausted I was taking care of normal little children. And to think of someone like little Eula that takes, you know, so much extra care. And, all the children.
I think maybe, too, with us being older, I'm 40 now, my husband's 50. It's, you've got more patience, you've got more time. Mm-hmm. Maybe we've got the financial backing, as I say, that goes a long way with the thing
yeah,
like this.
Yeah, you said you were able to have a housekeeper.
Yes, I do have a housekeeper.
So that somebody is making the meals
Someone is making the meals. Someone is, if one of them has an appointment, I can take just that one child. I believe very strongly that each child should have a time with their mother by themselves. When there's four little ones like this, I like to see that one day is set aside every so often for that one particular child. I have my oldest at the moment goes to a different school from the other two because she is six. The other two are at nursery school, and it means that she has a holiday every now and again, whereas the other two are at school.
Mm-hmm.
And often on that day I'll take her out by herself and we just go shopping or something, but that day the day is hers.
Mm-hmm.
And we do what she wants to do. Eula gets lots of times by herself when all the other three are at school. The middle two I do the same with.
Mm-hmm.
They have times when they're just with me,
mm-hmm.
one or other of them. And I try and make it at least once a week. They all have swimming lessons. They go to the YMCA and they have gym and swim.
Mm-hmm.
And that time is just theirs. It's an hour. And they have half an hour swimming and half an hour's gym.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a mother and child affair. So I'm there three times a week.
Well, it's a full-time job
yeah.
for you. And you have to be very alert and very patient and keeping their needs in mind and your own needs and your husband's, too. And I see this happening here this weekend because you say you take off a certain amount of time to be here with the kids away from their other routine. But I hope that Do you and your husband get away by yourselves at all? Is this possible?
We don't really. We never go away. I would never leave them overnight. Everyone says, why don't you go overnight somewhere? And I just couldn't do it.
Not yet, with the baby.
No,
the
I couldn't leave any of them overnight, not even the six-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that there are times. We go out in the evening sometimes, not very often.
Mm-hmm.
About once a month, I suppose. If we're invited out, we would go out together. But we also don't hesitate in leaving them, like at this hotel now. Last night we went and had a drink on our own.
Mm-hmm. I saw you sitting out in the lobby. And
yes,
we
know the children are safe. We've just come back from England by sea. We had 10 days on the ship each way. And the children went to bed at 7:30, 8 o'clock, and we spent the evenings up in the public mm-hmm. rooms. So, you know, I mean, that's a lot of parents sit with their children at night in these places, but we have no fear of leaving them. We know once they're asleep, as long as we check on them. I mean, we wouldn't go outside the hotel, but they've got each other, and they don't mind leaving us
mm-hmm.
or being there for short times. I've been sitting this afternoon; they've been resting. And although my husband's gone shopping again, he's taken the oldest one, so she's had a bit of time with him,
mm-hmm.
just father and daughter together.
And
I've been out there sitting reading for almost 2 hours now by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's how you make it. Life is what you make it. And
This is what I was realizing in watching you in operation here this weekend. Little Anne, by the way, is now up in her mother's lap and down again, and she's been clinking some keys around, so those extraneous noises that you listeners have been hearing have been being supplied by Anne, who's now gotten up from her nap. Tell me about your disciplining of the kids. We talked about that a little out in the pool.
Yes, well,
some people, when somebody has a handicap, you know, they say, oh, the poor little thing, and let them have everything they want, because to make up for them, for their difficulty.
But then you've got a spoiled handicapped child, which is as bad as a spoiled normal child. Now, we believe very much on discipline. We believe in good table manners, smack bottoms. If they're naughty, they get a smack bottom. Most of the time now I can say to one or other of them, well, I'm afraid it's time for a smack bottom, and we count three, and usually the tantrum is over and you don't have to smack the bottom, because they know they would get one if they carried on.
Yeah.
But there still comes a time when they have to be spanked sometimes. But we don't hesitate in smacking them if necessary. A good smack bottom is quicker than shouting at them or anything else, and they know that I mean it. So, but it doesn't happen that often.
Mm-hmm.
So, and lots of love as well. I think children basically need lots of love, lots of security, and discipline. It makes a nice child. I like a child. Other people's children can be a nuisance, as I'm sure you know. And I like my children to be liked.
Mm-hmm.
And I like them to know that when there's adults around, that they have to toe the line, and that we all love them, but they must be quiet.
But that they can have pleasant friends of all ages, but
exactly.
That they have to do their part.
Exactly. And the other thing is that when we come away like this, normally they're in bed by 7:30, but when we're away, routine goes to pot. I mean, they might be up tonight swimming in the pool till 10 o'clock, but I don't mind, as long as they're cheerful and happy. They can stay up as long as they want to. But when we go home tomorrow and they have to go to school the next day, it's back to 7:30 bed. So it's give and take.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, we have lots of routine and lots of discipline. But on the other hand, they know how to behave when we're away. They've been halfway around the world, all three of them. So mm-hmm.
do they have friends that come in to play?
Our house is like the Pied Piper's house.
so that their friends are not hanging back and saying, oh, there's something wrong with
not at all.
With Mary or with Wendy or...
I usually, if Mary particularly as the oldest gets a new friend, I usually ring up the parent and say, Mary does have a vision problem, and if they're in the house, could they just watch her on stairs and things if she's invited over? But
mm-hmm.
otherwise, I don't do anything about it. Wendy's tummy is She's still in diapers because she doesn't have a bowel control yet. And again, she's at a Montessori school, so I obviously have to make special provisions for her, mm-hmm. because it's a medical problem. So I make sure people know that she has got a problem. Also, there's the worry with Wendy that she could get a blockage in her stomach if she ate something large and it got caught in the plastic tubing that she's got inside her.
Mm-hmm. There still is the plastic tubing.
Oh, yes, that'll be there for life.
Will she have that for life?
Yeah. So mm-hmm. we have to make sure that that people know that there is a possibility that something could happen with her, and to know that they must ring me if they see she's distressed in any way.
Mm-hmm.
I would never let Wendy go to someone's house without them being aware that she had lots of medical problems. It would be very unfair
mm-hmm.
that people weren't aware, because they see a perfectly normal child.
Yes.
That they didn't know what was mm-hmm. going on underneath her stomach, underneath her dress. It hides her scars.
Well, I don't have a watch on, and so I don't know how long we've been talking, but I think it's probably about time, isn't it?
Yes.
It's after our 15 minutes. But do you have anything you'd like the Illinois and Wisconsin kids to hear, or have we covered your philosophy fairly well?
I don't think so. I would like all adopted children to realize how much their mothers, their biological mothers and their mothers, love them. I think adopted children feel that they are different, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Their biological mother, that's their mother whose tummy they came out of, gave them up for a reason, and it's usually a reason that the biological mother felt was best for that particular child at that particular time, and they would never have been adopted by their mother unless she really wanted children, and their father, and the whole family. It includes grandparents and aunts and uncles and sisters. Mm-hmm. And
so in a sense, the adopted child has that sometimes over the natural child.
Yes, they're very, very wanted, and no child that is adopted, nobody would have gone through it's hard work adopting a child, mm-hmm. in Canada particularly, I don't know in America, but it's hard work to fill in all the papers, the medicals, the interviews, and you've got to really want a child to get to the end result of having that baby in your arms, and it's only a very, very wanted child that's adopted and loved as they should be, I'm sure.
Well, thank you very much for consenting to meet a stranger. I feel as if we're friends at this point, and for talking to the children that are going to be listening in the Springfield area, and then up in Wisconsin probably too.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.